just had a documentary. Hi, my name is Dickie, that just came out. Rich Clune joins us once again. Rich, welcome back to the show, man. How are you?
I'm doing well, fellas. How you guys doing?
Good. Well, when we had you on first, Rich, you know what? We were talking about the documentary. Couldn't get into it too much because we wanted to save it for people. But now that it's out there and kind of like you'd been pretty open about your story, but there's obviously lots of people that I'm sure when they saw it, they, you know, they learned even more. How is it kind of having your life out there on screen now?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I've been actually overwhelmed with the reception that I've gotten, the feedback, which, you know, it's been amazing to see. But yeah, I don't know. It's not like, you know, I certainly knew what I was getting into when I decided to go down this road and sit down and do the film with the guys. But, you know, nothing's really changed. I think I've been pretty honest. I think that anytime you see things on camera, on film, they probably resonate a little bit different than like a print ad or an article. You know, it's one thing to write something and talk about things. It's another thing. I think it was probably the first time I really got into like talking about my brother and then really acknowledging kind of just how truly dark things got. And, you know, I was talking about this earlier, on the Hockey News podcast, was that there's some things that happened while they were recording and filming, that I, you know, I hadn't really acknowledged just how dark things had gotten. And I was sitting there, you know, doing the one-on-one thing with Taylor, the director, and you know, behind the camera, I was sharing this earlier when I was referencing, you know, I started to recall the time in the playoffs and you know, the stuff with Rick Rippon came up, and I'm kind of sitting there, for those who have watched the film, they'd be able to remember this part, and I'm literally asking like, why am I still alive? And I kind of had forgotten I was being interviewed and filmed, and I'm like looking at Taylor looking for an answer, and I'm kind of getting like very emotional. But behind the camera, he was crying himself, and he can't talk, right? Because he doesn't want to interrupt the sound. And then that made me more emotional. So we've shared that kind of moment. But so I think those are new things that people would never, you know, I've heard me talk about. But, you know, I mean, that being said, like, it's not a complete life story. It's a 50-minute film. And, you know, I was, like, unless there's, like, a 10-part Netflix documentary series on some topic, I don't want to watch a movie, let alone a movie about myself, that's longer than an hour. So it's like, let's just get after it for an hour, no messing around. I don't really care what street people grew up on. It's like, just, you know, let's get after it. And I love the choices that the directors made to really do that. And, you know, I think, you know, there isn't really a moment in the film that is, you know, sort of boring. And, yeah, it was fun for me to watch other people talk. I don't really care for listening to myself, but, you know, obviously my brother's huge part of my life, and you know, I think that, you know, I myself have been affected by other addicts and alcoholics and people who struggle. So it's like, there isn't any single person on this planet where these types of things don't touch them, you know, may not very well be directly, but indirectly. And it's like, when I watch my brother speak, it's like I'm projecting other things that I've, you know, dealt with other people in my life, not even me. So I feel like a lot of people, the feedback I'm getting is like, they've been in my brother's shoes. You know, they've had to take care of an addict or, you know, watch someone really struggle and just basically felt helpless and not really knowing what to do. So that's been pretty cool to see a lot of people sort of support my brother and give that feedback.
Joined by Rich Clune, just came out with the documentary. So, Rich, going back and when you were approached to do this, what was your motivation as far as, you know, what message did you want people to hear from you about your story?
Well, I think over the last, you know, I think about 5 years ago when I was playing for the Predators, I had a crew of filmmakers who sort of brought up a similar idea, but I didn't really I didn't really, I still don't know much now. I mean, I know more about myself, but I was, wasn't ready. And, you know, I was, you know, playing for the Predators and just doing my thing, and I didn't really feel up to it. And then coincidentally, just over a year ago, there was, you know, the Taylor and Harris and the rest of that crew approached me around the same time as, you know, a broadcaster here in Canada did. And it was just sort of coincidence. So I just, you know, I just figured I would explore that. And for me to make a film, I was just adamant that, you know, I was adamant that it would be something that could be accessible for teenagers and up, you know, not to make something that would be too heavy or too, like, you know, whatever, just shock value stuff that teenagers couldn't watch. You know, I really think that in the company of a parent, or, you know, the truth is like I talk about in the film, I started drinking and doing drugs at like 13. And I think the director and the film guys, you know, presented these things in a tasteful way that, you know, young teenagers can watch it. And, you know, like I've referenced before, you know, sort of the most important person who needs to hear that I'm an alcoholic and an addict today is me. And I know that. And it's like, you know, there's a self-preservation element for me being so public. It's like, it's keeping myself honest and kind of drawing a line in the sand of those around me and setting a boundary. But then at the same time too, is that I've benefited from others being so honest and forward and sharing their stories. And I know the difference it had made in my life and other people that I know that are similar to me. So if I could, you know, provide some sort of insight or hope for another person struggling after watching it, and, you know, even if it doesn't help them in that moment, but maybe down the road, then it would make it worth it. And then as far as the film being available on iTunes for rent for $5, I think, you know, I really respect these filmmakers, and I don't think enough filmmakers really do what they've done. Is like, they bet on themselves, they finance the movie themselves, they've, you know, basically, you know, they had opportunities to have the film shown on different streaming platforms, but they really believe that the film they made, they wanted to bring it to audiences themselves through iTunes, but also in return, myself and them included, you know, a portion of the proceeds will definitely be given back to different mental health initiatives, you know, all over North America for sure. And then depending on the success of the film, we would love to make a difference in a number of places. But I guess those would be my motivations from that question you asked.
Rich Clune joins us on Edmonton Sports Leader TSN 1260. Of course, former NHLer, currently playing for the Toronto Marlies. Just had his documentary, Hi, My Name is Dickie. It came out and is now, of course, available for only $5. Your opportunity to watch it. It's, you know, Rich, having watched it myself while I was on holidays, and it was great timing for me because, you know, I could watch it and not feel like there was, you know, any rush to do anything else. I found it interesting that the filming of it, if I'm not mistaken, where you filmed some of those scenes, was it not in the arena that you first started playing in as a young kid?
Yeah, it was filmed in there's some on-ice insert shots and sequences that was filmed.
Well, I'll have to get back with Rich. With this, Rich, thanks for that. It's perfect time. We need to go to commercial break anyway. I was going to ask you to stick through, so it worked out just fine. And so, you know, the reaction you mentioned has been great from people, but, you know, what's funny, I've talked to people that have written books about themselves, and a lot of times people close to them didn't know the extent of things. So I'm guessing a lot of your teammates or current ones and former teammates maybe have kind of reached out because they probably in watching this learned stuff they didn't even know. And they're like, man, I was with you every day and I didn't know that to that extent. Is that kind of the feedback you've got from teammates?
Not really. I feel like the feedback I've gotten was, you know, just guys are proud that I'm continuing on with my sobriety, and then trying to give back and sort of make a difference because I've benefited so much from the help I've gotten. But I think, you know, people that knew me as a young teenager, probably like, you know, that I went to elementary school with or, you know, maybe early on in high school.
Okay.
But the truth is that, you know, a lot of people who knew me actually have reached out and said, yeah, like I, you know, I always wondered about you, or it makes sense that you kind of went down this road. And, you know, I've had to make a lot of amends to people over the years because of my behavior. And for the most part, most people have been, you know, been great. But I'd say it's probably the opposite. A lot of people are like, yeah, I mean, this stuff makes sense. I could tell something was wrong, and I'm glad that you're kind of in a place where you've moved beyond that. Although, you know, I still have my own, I struggle in different ways, but I feel great today.
Well, and that's great. And Rich, because it's not just the addiction, it's also mental health. And I think mental health is a challenging one for a lot of people because it can impact people in different ways and you don't really even know it. Like sometimes, oh, that guy's just a jerk. Well, it doesn't necessarily turn out that that's really the case, right? So this was more than just about battling, you know, addiction.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think obviously the huge theme of the film is the relationship between my brother Matthew and I, and sort of that, you know, unconditional love that family members can have. And, you know, the truth is that my family's been there to support me. And I know that there are other people who struggle and they don't necessarily haven't had the support that I was lucky to receive. So, you know, I'm completely aware of that. I mean, I say this all the time, like I've lived a really privileged life. And, so I really can't, you know, stress that enough that my family is, you know, I think this film it was nice to see sort of my family be a part of it. And just to hear my brother talk and, you know, every day, the truth is, you know, I've never asked him, you know, to forgive or forget or whatever, but I guess the way that I can make it up to him specifically today is just to continue to make good decisions and, you know, try my best, and we're closer now than we've ever been.
When you look back on the way things played out and, you know, your life and then doing this film, you know, at times, you know, did it get really hard to kind of to watch and relive a lot of those things that happened and, you know, for whatever reason?
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. Last night, I actually ordered the film on iTunes myself, and it was the first time I'd actually seen it. I saw clips of it off a laptop, just, you know, like a rough copy version when I sat down with Taylor and Harris months ago before COVID hit. But I stayed out of it. I mean, it really, you know, I typically don't like to listen to myself speak or talk. I feel like that's like everybody. It's like I find myself, it's just uncomfortable watching yourself speak or talk. But yeah, I watched last night from start to finish. And it was, you know, I didn't really realize how emotional I had gotten, especially at the parts where I, you know, I started to think about players like Rick Rippon and, you know, players in the same, you know, same sort of scenarios. And then talking about my brother. And the truth is, it's easy for me to admit to people that I did a ton of cocaine and drank way too much. And I, you know, I was into painkillers and ecstasy and all these things. These things, honestly, you know, and the truth is, you know, not everybody can really, you know, they find it, whatever, a bit too much, but those are easy for me to say. The things that are hard for me to talk about and the things that are difficult are the way that I felt. And, you know, there's some things that, listen, you know, I wasn't trying to make a film that shocked people. And, you know, you only have so much time. I'm not trying to like air out my complete like dirty laundry in public. I think I, you know, shared in a general way of some places that I've been but it's tough to watch myself, you know, talk about how I felt. And when I did that interview, it dawned on me just how dark it had really gotten for me because, you know, after a certain point, I've really felt good about life, and I have my bad days, but sort of going back to that place and thinking about, you know, that time frame is tough for sure, but the filmmakers did an unbelievable job of handling it, and it's worked out better than I ever could have imagined.
Rich Clune joins us. We're talking about his documentary, Haima, My Name is Dickie, which is now out and available. And Rich, how much of that is just self-forgiveness? Right? How important has that been for you? Because I had a few friends who used to be alcoholics, and they say at times that's their biggest hurdle. They felt like, you know what, me not drinking anymore, not doing drugs is kind of easy, but it's me allowing myself to be like, oh, geez, I remember some of the bad things I did, but to be able to move past it, acknowledge it, and then move past it. How have you been able to handle that part and forgive yourself enough that you can say, hey, you know what, like, I can't change the past. I can only be aware of it. How much of a challenge was that, and did that emotion come up again when you watched the film?
Yeah, I think that's been a very slow process for me. You know, at times life has been as uncomfortable as it was before I got sober, just because I don't have anything to, you know, my coping mechanisms of drinking and drugs and drowning everything out and drowning, you know, the noise in my head and the constant, like, self-conflict and that inner dialogue and stuff. You can't drown those out with substances, so you're just left there with those thoughts. And so I've been lucky enough to get the right kind of treatment and help. But I think a lot of it too is, like, you know, once I got sober, like, my ego still today. And, you know, I used to think ego is just thinking that you're better than everybody, but it's that all encompassing absorption of the self and just trying to be able to put yourself and get out of your own way has really helped me in the process of forgiving myself. You know, it'd be impossible for me to let those things go while my ego is just continuously running, you know, and everything's all about me. And, you know, like I said, it's not so much, like, in my experience, you know, anything to do with a little bit of arrogance, but, you know, that's also another coping mechanism. But it's, you know, just realizing that I'm one person amongst many, and that, you know, these things, a lot of them are blown way out of proportion in my head. And a lot of the time people, you know, there are some things I've done. Listen, there are some things that I've done that, you know, I'll never be able to take back. But also, you know, well, I'm not as important as I think I am. So it's like, you know, how can we just get right sized and move on and become a member of society, as opposed to, like, you know, building those walls and then not being able to connect with people. You know, like, I'm much more comfortable connecting with people now as this process has gone on, and I've really, you know, seen some of the ways that my ego has just prevented that from happening. So,
Rich Clune, join us. You know, Rich, you know, this is an ongoing process for you, but, you know, just ice time, being on the ice, or just living your life, is it just a lot easier to operate, or is there still the you know, just as far as you just mentioned, your interaction with people, the way you play, and is your mind freer, and you're able to just kind of go on with what you want to do and make yourself happy?
I think what you're asking is, now that I'm sober and I've, you know, where I'm at in my life, does it allow me to enjoy hockey more, and do I go to the rink with
that's
a more
way of saying it.
That's a great question. I think that, I mean, my best day before sobriety, I wouldn't even take it over my worst day, and that's the truth. I mean, I've played at the highest level in the playoffs, and for me, I mean, that was everything I dreamt of as a kid. But the truth is, I couldn't really enjoy it all because I was so depressed and dependent on booze to, like, you know, go to bed at night. I'm like, there's no way to live your life. And so, I mean, it's the best decision I've ever made. And I know, like, I'm a hard worker, and I'm a good athlete, and I've, you know, luckily, you know, good genetics and my played a lot of sports growing up. So I, you know, I'm not like selling myself short on that aspect, but just every day, my energy level, you know, now that being said, like, I think I've been on your show before and, yep. and you know, I think a big surprise when people meet me is the fact that I can still pull an all-nighter and party just without the booze and the drugs. So if I stay up all night, I'm cranky and you do not want to be around me and I am not enjoyable to be around. But it's a lot easier to shake off a sober hangover, as they call it, and come to the rink and still work hard than it is if I was up all night blowing lines. So my life's better, man, like every day. Like, and a lot of it, too, is just hitting the repeat button, not trying to do anything special. Just come to the rink, have fun, and not have that huge burden on my back that I had before. So, yeah, it's better than I could have ever imagined. I mean, you know, there was a huge transition period that I would say probably lasted around 2 years where it really took me. I started to notice a lot more comfortability after around 2 years sober, but you know, it's been awesome.
Rich Clune joins us now. Rich, as a hockey fan, as a player, now I won't ask you about the Eastern Conference because obviously he's a member of the Marlies. I think I know who you're rooting for in the East. But when you look at the Western Conference now, you got 12 teams in a bubble. Just as a former player, like obviously this is new for players. There's no question about it. But you know, players are very adaptable. They'll figure it out. The bubble has been proven. The players have taken it very serious even before they officially got in the bubble with no positive tests, thankfully, in the last week. But what intrigues you most in this format? What are you most forward to looking for to kind of see unfold throughout this year's playoffs?
Well, I think that the way this format is in particular and just the nature of how there's been a massive layoff, I think now what I'm excited to see is that these teams that have to play this initial play-in round, they're going to be dangerous. Whoever walks out of that first best-of-five series, in my opinion, now, you know, take that for what it's worth, I think they're going to have almost an unfair advantage over those teams that were seeded higher and that are sitting around playing. Now, don't get me wrong. It may or may not play a factor. We'll see. But I am interested to see when those teams walk out of that playoff round and they secure that last playoff spot. And the truth is that I know a few of the teams. I'm not. I'll do some reading up in the next coming days and familiarize myself. But I think those teams that walk out of that first playoff round are going to be very dangerous. And I would be, you know, if I'm going to make a prediction, I wouldn't be surprised if a team that plays that initial playoff round wins the Stanley Cup. But I know you guys are from Edmonton, and the truth is, I have a lot of close friends on that team. Zach Cassian, who's probably been arguably the best training partner I've ever had. Zach and I trained out in Santa Monica a few years ago for 2 months together, and he's probably the best athlete I've come across as far as in the gym and his work ethic. I mean, and then James Neal and I came up through Dallas together. You know, I've met a couple other guys on the squad, Darnell Nurse. So I'm certainly rooting for up to me. I'd see a Toronto Edmonton final.
Who
wouldn't want to see, you know, Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews and Marner kind of go at it, and clearly, you know, I'm biased over Toronto, but I'm also interested to see what the game is going to look like with an empty building. I think it's a massive opportunity for the broadcasters to really hone in on the actual the product on the ice and kind of dramatize the filming of it and really drop into like what's going on, because they're left with no choice but to drown out the stands, I imagine. So I hope that they bring us right into, like, you know, I don't know if that's like tapping into more players mic'd up or how they're going to navigate that, but I mean, selfishly as a fan, because that's how I'm going to be watching, I want to get right up close and like you know, hear what they say to each other. And because I know that's, for me, the best part of the game is being right in there and just that aspect of it. So I think hockey's got a massive opportunity to thrust itself into the limelight as far as professional sports goes. And then you look at, you know, fortunately there's been no positive tests. So all the teams are going in with a healthy staff and roster, which, you know, I think really speaks volumes to the character of hockey players and their staffs. They seem super focused. And I was actually skating with the Leafs for a little bit during phase two. But due to the fact that I'm a minor leaguer now, you know, I couldn't participate beyond phase two. But so I got to see, you know, what the Leafs went through on a day-to-day basis through those few weeks there. And, you know, it was difficult. It was tough. So I can only imagine that's going around on all the dressing rooms. And I think really now talent is going to stand out because, you know, the puck's going to get dropped and there's just not a ton of time for players to get in shape. So the first few rounds, talent is going to take over. And then I think, you know, by the conference final, or maybe even a bit before that, the conditioning will really kick back in. And then, you know, maybe teams can will themselves into some games, but, you know, like skill and talent and the ability to execute a game plan and the intelligence of the coaches, that's going to be at the forefront. So you're really going to see who the better teams are early on, and then I think it will even out as the playoffs go by.
Rich, once again, where can people watch your documentary? Hi, my name is Dickie.
You can watch it on iTunes, Apple TV. Just search the title. It's on there. And you can rent it. Obviously, you know, part of the proceeds are going to go to mental health initiatives for sure in North America for the time being. And then hopefully, you know, over time, the film can kind of build up success and maybe we can give back and make a difference, you know, globally. But that's where you can watch it for now. And yeah, thanks a lot for having me on. It's been awesome talking to you guys. I always like coming on with you guys.
Well, Rich, I appreciate it. Just want to read one text to you before I go. Hey, guys, I'm literally in tears listening to this interview. My brother is going through alcohol addiction that is ruining his life. It means a lot to hear someone talk about their struggles so openly. Thanks again to Rich. I'll definitely be making sure my brother and I listen to this together. Regards, Steve. So, Rich, you're always impacting people every day when you talk. So keep it up. We thank you for this, and good to talk to you again. Enjoy the playoffs.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, that blew me away. Obviously, like I said, you know, this disease affects everybody, and my heart goes out to the brothers there. I hope they can be there for each other. Thanks a lot, guys.